Now we go to Gemini, beginning in this next section, 98B. The colors have been suggested by the Tibetan, and they were used in meditation in the Glamour group, in the Observers of Reality group, that group of nine that the Tibetan was training. So whatever may be the source, and some have said that they are derived from the Golden Dawn, but then what did the Golden Dawn derive them from? Whatever may be the source, the Tibetan found them useful enough to introduce them in meditations that he gave to his groups of nine. So there must be some validity here. Let's see if... yeah, I suppose I could make these a little bit smaller. That would be one way of doing it, and keep everything together. So, here we have Gemini, and for the undeveloped man, mutation of relation, and I serve myself. This is, let instability do its work. For the advanced man, the love energy is growing, and there is the orientation of, I serve my brother. Notice how service is found in relation to this Gemini energy. And finally, for the disciple or initiate, right relation, which is based on archetypal living, and I'm serving the one, I serve the one, of whom the archetypes are aspects of its intention. Well, let instability do its work. Always the undeveloped man is separative and has a vision of himself as the material personality. Materiality exists in all cases, no matter what the sign may be. In these stages, when the higher of the pairs of opposites is not glimpsed. So there is a constant changeability here of the unit coming into contact with many different types of units and learning something about them. But the environment and others are used for the self. The idea of service is pervasive here. Gemini is, at least at this time, a constellation which conveys the second ray energy, and thus the idea of service, of being for others. But in this case, the other is oneself. So there is manipulation here as well, because Gemini is the third sign of the zodiac, and the service is towards the only convincing reality sensed by the individual at this stage. So all things, the many things that Gemini can come in contact with, are used for the benefit of the one, the lower one, the selfish one. So there is opportunism amidst all of this instability, and whatever comes along, whatever energy threads are presented, are utilized for the welfare of the lower ego. There's great flexibility, much instability, and the gathering of energies for oneself alone. But now there is an orientation. That word is not by accident, because it means to face the sun, and the sun is the soul. So at least the sun is the mind, and the mind brings light. So the advanced man certainly has the mind working. And we remember that the advanced man can become the aspirant. That's important, because there need not be only selfish advancement, but the sense of a higher power and higher types of relationship. This entire sign is dealing with the light of interplay, the light of relationship, really. So there is the sense that all human beings are brothers. A little bit of Venus comes in. We had Mercury at first. Oh yes, I suppose I should have spoken of the heaviness of Vulcan in relation to the Earth. Yes, but how Vulcan, when in Taurus, how Vulcan is connected with the heart of the sun, strangely, at least in its higher rays. And so my old teacher used to play with the word Vulcan and said, well, love can, reversing these syllables. Love can. So Vulcan, the light of Vulcan reveals the light of the love of the solar logos, and so does the higher Venus. Being a love wisdom type of planet, essentially, reveals the love of the solar logos. And Vulcan, being on the first ray, at least in its soul, is a representative of the intense light of life. Well, I've gone back there a bit. Forgive me for that. I just realized some of the things I have not said. Well, there are so many things I have not. But anyway, incipient brotherhood is here, and we were in Gemini, and we do remember that the esoteric ruler, it's not mutable Mercury, which fits so well with mutation of relation, probably through its ever-active third-ray personality. But now we have the esoteric ruler of Gemini coming in as the person becomes more of the aspirant. And the realization that there is a potentially loving relationship between human beings, a type of brotherhood. We remember that the third decanate of Aquarius is the decanate of brotherhood, and it's ruled by Venus. So Venus always has to do with the attempt to make the two brothers come into loving relationship with each other. Mars is the lower brother in a way, and doesn't see that brotherly relation, but sees more of a conflict. But Venus, from its soul perspective, tries to bring the brothers into harmonious, loving relationship. We remember in the labors of Hercules how it was that the service theme was strongly accented. Hercules began by not recognizing the intuition. His second labor involved Antaeus, or overcoming glamour. His third labor involved discrimination because he was chained to the altar by the false teacher Bucyrus. And only when he really began to serve, serving the chained Prometheus by freeing him, serving the overburdened Atlas by sharing some of the burden, did the object of his quest, the knowledge that he sought, come to him. So when we are dealing with liberty, equality, and fraternity, fraternity is particularly connected with Gemini. Liberty with Aquarius, and equality, of course, with Libra. I serve my brother, facing the sun of the soul and realizing the magnetic, loving relationship between human beings and the need to serve the other, who is really the brother. So looking away then from the lower ego toward the welfare of others. And it's a right enough type of relation. But finally, for the disciple or the initiate, we have true right relationship. Right human relations is coming in under Aquarius, but also under Gemini. True fraternity. And here the spiritual soul is being revealed. The soul reveals the relationship between human beings. the spiritual soul, reveals the relationship of all things to the One. So a large perspective is in view here. It's more Jupiterian even than Venusian. We've been told of how the second ray works particularly through Gemini and Jupiter combined, and how the union of spirit and soul is undertaken under the energy pattern of Jupiter in Gemini. So the sense that to serve one's brother really is to serve the One begins to dawn, and the oneness is in mind. Now, when we serve, how do we think of it? Are we serving others, or are we somehow, through our service to them, serving the planetary whole or the solar systemic whole? We're moving towards synthesis for sure. The keynote is Gemini turns towards Libra. Well, these are two air signs. They do not have animal figures associated with them. And the interplay of Gemini, which is fluctuating, oscillatory, revelatory, but not binding, moves towards Libra, where a very magnetic energy is fusing, uniting, marrying the opposites, and they begin to merge with each other. With Gemini, there is not the merging. There is the visibility of the nature of each unit. And there is exchange, but there is not this coming together that we find in Libra. So the pairs of opposites recognize each other in Gemini, but really merge in Libra. I serve myself, I serve my brother, I serve the One. Well, what about the esoteric rulership of Gemini? It is Venus, and Venus reveals the solar orb. It does reveal the One through love and wisdom. But also the hierarchical ruler is Earth. I serve the planet. I serve the One Earth. Here upon the playing field of Earth, the individual understands that every act of service is really an act of service to the planetary logos. So right relation is truly achieved, and the Earth rulership of Gemini has some very practical service implications, moving our planet towards sacredness. And all things will come not just into relationship, which is very mutable, fleeting, and so forth, but into right and stable relationship. And this, the Gemini individual can further. Okay, Gemini moves towards Libra. Now our next focus, Gemini having moved towards Libra and towards its magnetism. You know, it's a question of the rays of Gemini and Libra, if you really think about it. Gemini brings in only the second ray, according to the Tibetan's assignment for this world period, and Libra only the third ray. And yet there is implied in Gemini a kind of third ray, it being the third sign, and the constant mutability of its nature, the constant movement. And with Libra, we have descriptors which are very similar to the second ray, not just the third, the Prince of Peace as the representative of the Spirit of Peace conducting the second ray. And if we look down here, we see in Libra that divine love is found and understanding. understanding, I suppose, we can apply either to the second or third ray, but certainly loving understanding is the quality of the second ray. So each of them has similar rays, and neither one of them, either Gemini or Libra, is an animal sign. The circle of animals applies only to a certain extent. The air signs do not show the animal nature, but rather the human nature, and the one thing we seem to have is an object in Libra, that is, the scales. So Aquarius has the human being, the water carrier. Gemini has two human beings, and Libra, the other air sign, not an animal, although it has rather the object called the scales. This may be somewhat different in the labors of Hercules. I mean, the boar, the wild pig, features strongly in the Libran labor, but perhaps not as the major feature. There again, we have Hercules and his friends. All right, now we move on to Cancer, and for the undeveloped man, the blind unit is lost, blinded by mass consciousness, and the epitome here is the mass of lower lives, all found within the dense physical vehicle of the planetary logos, the 18 lower subplanes, the number 18 correlating with the moon, which rules Cancer, interestingly. We have the dark light, the latent light, the hidden light. We do not have the blazing forth of illumination. We don't really have the effects of individualization. Well, individualization did occur some 21 million years ago for Earth humanity, and much earlier than that for moonchain humanity. But the Tibetan told us this interesting thing, that the psychological nature, the psychic nature, the emotions and mind of the Cancerian units in the mass consciousness are not really individualized. There may be a distinctive body, but in terms of building an individuated, truly individualized, subtle nature or psychic nature, it hasn't happened for the great majority of those who are subject to the influence of Cancer. There is great isolation here. The man may be part of a herd, part of a group or a tribe, but there is no spiritual light to be found. So isolation rules. When we move on to the advanced man, the encapsulated unit, the unit awakens to that which is around and is not only preoccupied with his own vehicles and their satisfaction, but is beginning to become sensitive. Now, the three rulers are the moon, Neptune, and Neptune. And in fact, the Tibetan has said that the moon is really a veil. It's actually the real ruler is Neptune in all three cases, just like the ruler is the sun in Leo in all three cases. So there is a growing sensitivity, and the ring pass knot is expanding to include the environment, the family, that which is around. We are moving towards the perception of greater wholeness in the advanced man. And the place of stability, the place of safety and security and of refuge, if you will, the home, is coming into focus. So one knows the point of retreat and the point of protection. The house can be a small house or an increasingly large house until it includes the entire whole, which it will later for the disciple and the initiate. The growing sensitivity of this second stage of advanced man shows that at least in the later part of this stage, he's beginning to respond to Neptune, he awakens to that which is around through his growing vulnerability, sensitivity, his capacity to feel that which the environment produces, and the associated persons are also part of the environment. So he's no longer so self-centered, and begins to include in his increasingly lighted house — it's certainly beginning to be lighted mentally by this point — he begins to include others. A Cancer, a great sign of exclusiveness in the beginning, but inclusiveness later on. And perhaps Neptune is the most boundary-destroying, inclusive planetary energy that we have in our solar system. Then for the disciple and the initiate, well, usually the disciple begins with the type of consciousness which ends with the initiate consciousness. The whole is seen as one. Perhaps if we want to think of the universal whole, we can say the universal whole is felt as one. But eventually for the initiate, his particular macrocosm is seen as one, is experienced as one. And then all human beings are included in this picture. I guess we're talking pretty much about life on this planet. The planetary whole is experienced as one. We remember that inclusive Jupiter is the exalted planet in the sign Cancer, and it includes an increasing number of people and of contents of consciousness within its ever-expanding ring pass knot, broadening its horizons constantly. Neptune, of course, comes along and dissolves every boundary, and thus necessitates a ring pass knot which is still beyond the one dissolved, and yet that farther one is dissolved again. So this is the embrace of humanity and the planet, and the feeling that although within the house is the limited family of familiars, within this larger, all-encompassing house is all of humanity, and every human being is thereby included. I can't say that the whole is seen as one will characterize every disciple, but by the time one is a true initiate of the third degree and has passed through the transfiguration, then we can truly say the whole is seen or experienced as one. And perhaps the identicality on some level of all human beings is embraced, is experienced. In general, though, when we look at these keynotes, we're not looking at the climactic phases of the initiate. We're looking at the general process. And in the general process, Cancer visions through the planet of aspirational vision, which is Cancer. Cancer visions life in Leo. In other words, the one who is indistinct, who has not accomplished a great deal, who is not focused, who is not distinctly luminous and noticeable, visions the individuated life of the truly distinct individual who is mentally radiant and radiant as the soul. So it's inevitable that the inchoate, dim, even hidden light of Cancer will begin to move towards a center, a brighter light, and the individuation will occur. The diffusion of Cancer will come to a point in Leo. This is the sign we have been studying. It is a sign of which touches on many states of consciousness and being which are still vague to humanity, vague even to fairly advanced thinkers, because it has to do with the cardinal, cross. But in general, we see the mass consciousness moving towards the individualized consciousness, and I wouldn't be surprised if a long period before individualization by the solar angels was under the direction of Cancer. The mass consciousness of gradually evolving animal man until he evolved to the point, with the sign Cancer still involved, when the Leo factor could enter. Even though in a way he continued in the Cancerian mode for 3 million years, we are told, before he really came to himself and noticed himself as distinct. So the arrows shot forth in Sagittarius, the arrows of the unit of fire, which was plunged into the lower man and into his brain even, they shot forth 21 million years ago, and the man and he was technically individualized, but continued in a fairly inchoate state of consciousness until the point which was established by the solar angels was in fact noticed, and he began to develop his sense of lower ego, and that was occurring some 18 million years ago, perhaps 18 and a half million years ago. Perhaps that was occurring at the time of the coming of the Lords of the Flame, who may have stimulated that process. So the indistinct becomes distinct, the diffused becomes focused, the loosely integrated becomes powerfully centralized. All of these are meanings of Cancer Vision's life in Leo. Okay. Now we move on to Leo itself. It concerns the point. We realize that life in Leo entails concentration. Concentration at a point is the beginning of the meditative process, which is governed by Leo. So we have, in a straightforward manner, the lower self, the higher self, and the one self. These are the three phases. When we talk about the higher self, we can wonder whether it really should include advanced man. If advanced man has an intellectually advanced consciousness, but one that is not yet spiritual. But perhaps the higher self is at least influential here. The sun can be associated with the lower self. The sun, which perhaps veils Jupiter, there's a hint about that. The sun veiling Neptune with the higher self, and which is a subtler organization and requires the sensitivity of Neptune to detect. But that higher self is not really coming into noticeability until certain experiences within the love petals occur, and the higher of the pairs of opposites is somehow felt, and aspirational application is made towards it. The one self, the disciple begins to appreciate that the higher self is part of the one self, and the initiate truly knows the one self. The hidden point is found here in connection with the lower self, almost hidden in the mass, not revealing, not expressing, not radiating, simply present but unrevealed. It's a bit like the second Ray story of the Blessed One. I am a Blessed One, but unrevealed. That Blessed One, let's find that, because it's kind of interesting. It's in esoteric psychology. Oh, let's say around page, maybe. It's in the 30s here. And stage by stage, he built this ark and floated upon the bosom of the waters. Deeply he hid himself, and his light was no more seen, only his floating ark, only his floating ark. So deeply he hid himself, and his light was no more seen. the hidden point. Now, of course, here, when we're discussing the Blessed Ones, we're really discussing the monadic nature and its extension as the monad in incarnation, or the jiva. So all of us are individuals, but we don't know that our inner point of light, where the solar angel has touched and continues to stimulate the mental unit, that point of fire, the point of mind, of love, and of will, which is the influential point sponsored by the solar angel or extended from the solar angel, that point is for a long time hidden within the lower vehicles. We could call it the veiled soul, the hidden soul. And at the heart of the soul is the monad, which is the jewel, which is represented as the jewel in the lotus. But eventually the man begins to realize himself as dual, as two. And he can begin to do this under the influence of Virgo. And then there are two suns, S-U-N-S, in his life. The higher self, at first vaguely felt, and the lower self with which he is familiar. So the familiar and the unfamiliar, and this is dramatized somewhat in the Gemini experience, and the fusion of these two selves occurs in the Virgo experience. But anyway, there is, from this higher power or higher point or point of soul, revelation beginning to pour forth. It can come in form of sound, of light, of color, of vibration. Something is sensed. Something is revealed from this higher subtle world, and the Neptune rulership is sensitive enough to begin to pick it up. Now, in the early stages of advanced man, there can be a lot of egoism. We don't for a minute think that in the early fifth petal process, the full higher self is known or appreciated. This can be one of the most egotistical times in the development of the human being, when we have individualism, the sense of the powerful self. And perhaps this can go on, as DK seems to suggest on page 18 of Esoteric Psychology 2, 4, 3, 7, or even 11 lives, before the higher point is really revealing. Well, the higher point may be revealing, but is it recognized as revealing? In the stage of aspiration and probationary discipleship, the soul can be recognized as a source of revelation, and then light is entering. Alignment, crisis, light, revelation, integration. The two stages of light and revelation can be covered here. The light of the soul, the type of light in Leo, begins to come forth and be recognized. But perhaps it's not recognized for what it is until we reach the truly disciplic stage. And in the stage of discipleship, we recognize that this higher self is a group being linked to many other group beings, and there is no real separation, such as the earlier experience in Leo seemed to indicate. And then we are on our way towards inclusiveness. First the sense of unity, and eventually the sense of oneness. So whereas the disciple may not fully appreciate the oneness of the self, the true initiate does appreciate this. And then this, this sense of being one and only, a one and only center, or one center and only that center, is relinquished. It's not that there are not points, but one relinquishes ownership over one's own point, as it were. One is decentralized and realizes that all the other points are centers of being for it as well. If in this state I center myself in you, I'm really centering myself in me, and in a larger sense, in the One. So every point is realized as a center within this larger being, the One, and it is appreciated with Pascal that God is an intelligible sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. So one gives up ownership of a distinct center with which one identifies as distinct from all other centers. No, there's only one center. There's only one point. One relinquishes proprietary ownership over one's own point and finds all points to be one's own. And every point is the center of the One Self. So you can transfer your center of identity into any being. And I think such great beings as the Christ were adept at doing this. I think it is a form of Tibetan yoga, the transferring of one's center into other apparent centers, only to find out that they're all one point and they're all one center. At that point, we relinquish locality. We become non-local beings and can find ourselves everywhere. After all, harmlessness is the expression of the life of the man who knows himself to be everywhere, we are told. Wherever anyone is, there he is. Wherever there is any point of being, there he is. And that is the Uranian aspect of Leo. Space is negated by Uranus, so one is everywhere. And the eternal now is going to emerge, and the whole sense of sequence will change under this quality of simultaneity, which is also conferred by Uranus, or in the higher Leo, the truly initiatic Leo experience. So one becomes then the relinquished point, the truly decentralized being. It's a bit like first removing the earth from the center of one's contents of consciousness, and then removing the sun from its centrality in the whole cosmos. It's really peripheral. It has its place, but its place is certainly not center. Matter of fact, there is no center. The center is everywhere. That's the perception that we have to understand. Leo seeks release in Scorpio is the keynote. The release is from the sense of isolated ahamkara. I am this and only this. It's into a larger group identification and eventually identification with the whole. But a certain destruction of the ring pass knot must occur. Now, Scorpio gives entree to the Buddhic level of understanding, which is intuitive and non-local, or can sense the self everywhere. So through the destruction of the causal body, which in a way is associated as a great sunflower, egoic lotus, with Leo, through that destruction, through the death-dealing powers of Scorpio, there is a release from centrality, a release from distinctive onlyness, a release into other beings, the ability to find oneself as others and to find oneself as the One. But the powers of Pluto under Scorpio are needed here. So we have a constant decentralizing process moving towards oneness. We discover ourselves to be a soul in the process of revelation. The real revealing point, I suppose, in the soul is the jewel in the lotus, but that is consummated at the fourth degree, when it is realized that the jewel in the lotus is really the monad, and the monad is, in a sense, everywhere. So, although Aquarius is the sign of universalization, or universality, Leo also achieves this growing universality in which all others are subsumed into the self, which is the one. Now, if we move on here to Virgo, notice I've been putting them in these colors, violet for Cancer and orange for Leo. I did kind of a blue-green for Virgo. It's not what the Tibetan suggested. He suggested yellow, probably through the Mercury rulership, because Mercury is considered to be the yellow planet. And I have spoken with some Virgoans who strongly identify with the color yellow, probably through the intelligence aspect of Mercury. But there's a sense of the mother being blue-green. We live on the blue-green planet. Maybe that's somewhat turquoise in nature. And the association of green with the personality and blue with the soul, and the merging of these two into blue-green, seems legitimately associated with Virgo, but the Tibetan has his own, of course, good reasons for allowing a meditation to take place for Virgo people using the color yellow. We have here, for the undeveloped man, the germinating energy, epitomized here as the mother. Then we have, for the advanced man, the creative force, the protector. Of course, the mother is also the protector, but the one who cherishes. And this is similar in some respects to the Cancerian energy, both of them ruled by the moon and in part by Neptune. And then for the disciple initiate, the Christ activity is entering. It's even entering in the later stages of the period of the advanced man. And then the light, which is the light which Christ referenced when he said, I am the light of the world. This is appreciated. Interesting that in the earth signs, which are apparently opaque, we do encounter different qualities of light. The greatest light in Taurus, and the Christ light in Virgo, and the light sublime in Capricorn. Different types of light encountered in the earth signs, and for that we need the esoteric astrological interpretation. Well, Virgo is the Great Mother, as it was in the previous solar system, and it provides the forms which have to be infused by the uplifting soul spirit. The process of germination is a slowly coming into form. So Virgo will, with this great power of endurance, will represent the slow growth of different types of forms in response to the evolutionary urge. The evolutionary thrust of Virgo, I think it had a lot of third ray and seventh ray connected with it in the previous solar system. The slow will to evolve, I think, is foundational in Virgo. And the slow growth of form within the mother matter, and as a result of the energies of mother matter, when stimulated by higher energies still. So everything is hidden here. It's one of the hidden signs. We learned that when we considered the five rulers of the cardinal cross, or the five planetary rulers, and when we considered the five signs. Now, it's the seven rulers of the cardinal cross and seven signs which appeared at a certain stage of evolutionary development, and they were Cancer and Virgo, and both of them had the hidden factor, but what was hidden in them was brought to light by the Scorpio experience, ruled by Pluto, which drags all things into the light, and by the type of light that Scorpio is, the light of day, bringing things into the light of day. So where things are veiled and covered in Cancer and Virgo, they are brought into the light of day. There's a lunar activity going on allied with germination in both Cancer and Virgo, but the moon is falling in Scorpio, so that hidden quality is exposed, and all that's going on in the lower realms of form is seen in the light of Mercury, which is very powerful in Scorpio. We enter now another phase for the advanced man who has certain high ideals. Idealism is brought in here in the sign Virgo. We're not talking about the intelligent activity of matter, which is intelligently creating forms under an early expression of Mercury for the mother. We're talking about the moon as it is veiling two creative forces. Well, Vulcan is definitely a creator in matter, and it is veiled by the moon, and perhaps most frequently understood as the veiled ruler in the esoteric position. But later, Neptune is also there, and Neptune is bringing forth the presence of the Christ, the individual Christ in this case, not the cosmic Christ, as in the case of Aries. The individual Christ is brought forward, and the soul within us becomes a truly creative force. It always is a creative force, but we begin to notice that it is. There's something in the higher realm of mind and on still higher levels, which is creatively working in form. And that which is created in this way, through the higher creativity of Vulcan and through the Christ force, needs to be protected. So values of a high nature and high ideals and even ideas need to be protected by the Virgoan individual who is the advanced man. Now, so often we think of Virgo in terms of purification. It is there in terms of purification. But it would be a very small description of the nature of this sign if we simply focus on the fastidiousness of the Virgoan, which accompanies the sensed need to purify on physical levels, especially at this time, and also on emotional and mental levels. First of all, we're working on physical purification, it seems. When one becomes a true aspirant, the need for emotional and mental purification also becomes evident. So the creative force which will create the forms through which the higher ideals and ideas can work, and through which the will of the soul can work, are encountered here in the advanced man. And he becomes the protector of the forms which are instrumental to the expression of those energies which the soul seeks to see expressed. But again, not until a later part of the fifth petal is the Christ light coming in. And that segues into the reception of Virgo energy by the disciple and the initiate, and the Christ activity, nurtured through initiation, is growing until at the third degree, we have the full-grown man in Christ, or at least grown sufficiently. By the fifth degree, one is truly fully mature in this Christ energy. And the five of the heart, the five of Leo, the five of the fifth kingdom, is active at this fifth degree. So we have different intensities of the Christ activity at the first, second, and third degree. The birth, the baptism of purification, and the transfiguration, or the actual entering into the higher world where the Christ energy is less trammeled, not so buried as it has been in the lower 18 subplanes. At the same time, the lower 18 subplanes are being purified under the Virgo energy so that the Christ activity can express, and the man becomes luminous, and through purification the aura is seen in the three centers in the head, which give the healing energy, or about the head, let's say, the crown center, the ajna, and the ulna major center form their triangle. The light breaks forth in the area of the pineal gland, and this dispelling radiance can be used in the healing arts in which Virgo is so involved, along with Aquarius and some other signs. Those on any sign can heal. It's just, and even on any ray, it's just a question of using the correct technique. And we can do so because we are all related to each other foundationally. The magnetism, the unification between us is a real factor, and we, our energy can flow into that of our brothers and sisters, and it can make a difference. So the healing work is dependent upon this innate connection. Now, the keynote is Virgo hides the light, it's the Christ light eventually, which irradiates the world and shines on earth across the sea in Aquarius. So we have here the individual Christ coming to birth, and it is growing along the way until in Aquarius it is broadcast far and wide and as a great giving in service can meet the needs of the many. So it's the universal radiation of what began as the hidden Christ, slowly growing within the personality and demonstrated in personal virtue until the group idea is grasped and the person becomes soul-infused and hence powerful in a group sense and can irradiate all indiscriminately in Aquarius. That's the thing about Aquarius. Let's just say that the radiance of the sun falls equally upon the just and the unjust. It is a spherical broadcasting energy. It is suggested by the symbol in the law of service where the urn or the full powers of the head center is properly balanced on the head of the individual and can be sent forth in all directions. There is a more focal giving when we have the vessel which the water bearer carries, and there he pours out more specifically, but still it is poured upon many. So Aquarius definitely has a Christ force connected with it, but it is universal in nature. So the germinating energy of the mother, the creative force, the protector coming under the moon, which is the sphere in which creativity occurs, under the impress of Vulcan, who is shaping matter to the ends of the soul, and Neptune, which is revealing the ideals and ideas which need to be poured into the form. And finally, we come to Jupiter, which suggests the great abundance of the Christ activity, especially once transfiguration has occurred and it's poured forth widely, inclusively, to many. And it fits, doesn't it, that Jupiter is the esoteric ruler of Aquarius, which is part of this keynote, the final term in the keynote. Virgo hides the light, which eventually, we would say, irradiates the world in Aquarius as Jupiter pours it forth in Aquarius for all in a most inclusive manner. Now, those are the first six of the responses. The first six of the tabulation of the responses of individuals at various points of development. to the incoming zodiacal energies. We have to realize, I guess it's a point to be driven home, that people at different stages of evolution respond in different ways to apparently the same energy, the zodiacal energy. The zodiacal energies are very rich, but they are veiled to many because the response apparatus just cannot register them or do anything useful with them. So there's a wide range of energies in each one of these zodiacal signs, but there cannot be proper response to all of them until a higher stage of evolution is reached. The advanced man who is verging on spirituality can respond to more than can the undeveloped man going through the many, many stages of being undeveloped. He's developing, of course, slowly, but still taken as a whole, he's in the undeveloped stage and still walking in the hall of ignorance. That's another way of looking at this. We could assign the three halls to these three categories. The hall of ignorance, in which the great majority of time is spent, can be assigned to the undeveloped phase, the undeveloped man. The hall of learning to the advanced man and to the petals, the second three petals, which are the love petals. It's not a full development of love there, but that's where the activity is occurring. And we are learning that we have a higher self in that hall of learning. And by the end of the fifth petal process, we pretty well know it. And then the hall of wisdom for disciples and initiates. So I think that's a good way of thinking of these three. And although the rulerships, Orthodox, Esoteric, and Hierarchical, do not have a strict one-to-one correspondence, there are overlaps, they too can be used. All right, well, we are at the point where we can say we're going to go on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure 98, C. We're still on page 332, and we've completed, in a way, the first half of the methods of response. We have to continue. So here is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 98B, and the beginning of 98C, still on page 332, but now moving really to 333, come to think of it. All right.